On FM, online and DAB digital radio.
This is Julian Clover.
Cambridge 105.
Daniel, during a week of resignations in Westminster on the Labour benches, you chose to stay in post as Shadow Transport Minister. What affected your decision?
I love doing my job. I'm passionate about buses and bikes, and we've got some very important legislation coming through. And I felt my responsibility was to the Labour Party as a whole. Whatever individuals feel about the leader was elected overwhelmingly last year. We now have another leadership election. But in the meantime, I'm loyal to the party, and I'll get on and do my job to the best of my ability. So that's why I decided to stay. I wasn't pumped.
Do you have any of your colleagues saying, oh, come on, Daniel, you really should join us here?
Well, I'm not part of cliques. I've always possibly stood slightly aside from that because my view is I've always been Labour. In some ways, it's easier to be Labour in the East of England because Labour's not a dominant party in the way of other parts of the country where you do get more cliques and factions. But I've always been absolutely clear about this. I'm Labour through and through, and I don't want to get involved in that kind of stuff. So my feeling was we've got a system, we've got a process, someone triggered the process, that's fine. And at that point, you have your discussions. But in the meantime, this serious business to be getting on with and re-regulating the buses, goodness me, don't we need that in Cambridge, in and around Cambridgeshire? So that's why I've stayed in. I've no idea what happens over the next few months, but my position's been clear. I'll stay in for as long as the leader of the Labour Party wants me.
OK, I've got another transport question to put you in a moment or two. But I'm wondering, in that leadership election, you've chosen to support Owen Smith as opposed to Jeremy Corbyn, who you're standing by in the meantime. I wonder, the problem that Mr. Smith clearly faces is that he has the support of you and many of your parliamentary colleagues in the Labour Party, but not necessarily the country as a whole. By that I mean the Labour country. How is that going to be squared ever?
Well, I think partly people don't know much about Owen at the moment. And I think already when they've seen him in the early clips on television, I think they'll see what I've seen and other colleagues have seen in Parliament, someone who's really, really impressive. And I don't know him well. Last year, I nominated Yvette Cooper, and I had worked with Yvette closely over many years, so it wasn't a difficult decision. This year, though, I've been struck by how impressive Owen has been in Parliament. He's a warm, engaging kind of character, and I think his political positioning is certainly left, I'd say left of Ed Miliband. I'm quite comfortable with that. I suspect a lot of people in the Labour Party will be quite comfortable with that because we need some big ideas and big solutions for the
country. Already you've got the sort of the forces working against him. There was the piece last weekend, people finding comments that he made when he was a lobbyist for Pfizer and referring to NHS choices. Are they not the same sort of choices that led to what we saw with Uniting Care and Hinchingbrook Hospital, for example?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we all had to work for a living in the past, and almost everyone's probably worked for companies that one doesn't entirely agree with. I used to work for Cambridgeshire County Council when it was run by a Conservative leadership. Now, just because I worked for Cambridgeshire County Council didn't make me a Conservative. In fact, I got in a bit of trouble because I used to write to papers and complain about them, and I was given a ticking off. But no, I mean, look at Owen, what Owen has done in the last year or two in Parliament, and it's impressive. He has driven the government back on some of the toughest welfare changes. And what's more is he inspires people. Now, also, you look at the people around him who are supporting him. Heidi Alexander, Kate Green, Lisa Nandy. These are exactly the kind of women who are where I am in the Labour Party, which is left of centre.
But are they, I wonder, the same people who will be casting their vote in a few weeks' time? But by that, I'm kind of thinking to myself, there will be people listening to this programme at the moment who are Labour supporters. They want to see a left of centre government in this country alongside their Cambridge Labour MP. But they're not necessarily party members, and it seems to be the party members who are very much behind Mr. Corbyn.
Well,
as are some Labour figures in Cambridge, Dave Bajans, for example.
Let's wait and see. I mean, my sense is that it's pretty evenly split, actually. I have plenty of people who say to me, I'm pleased with Jeremy, but I also have had plenty of people who say they're just not happy, particularly following the European referendum. And that was a key moment for me because I'm passionate about the European Union, as many people in Cambridge are. Jeremy, I don't think, quite shares that passion, perhaps. And for me, that's a defining difference. And Owen very clearly is standing with those of us who are going to fight and fight and fight to recreate a strong relationship with the European Union, and in many ways, I hope, stay in the European Union. So there's a clear difference of opinion there, and people will make their choices.
We heard from you at the start of the week with regards to the sale of ARM holdings. What does something like that do to an MP's post bag?
Well, my sense has been through the week, as I've talked to more and more people across Cambridge about it, there's a genuine sadness and unhappiness about it. Obviously, it was spun as being good news in a sense of investment and jobs. I have to say my immediate reaction was, I'm not so happy about this, because...
Doubling of jobs, though, always sounds good.
It does, but that's just a promise. It's, you know, the thing I've been pressing them for, and I've talked to the company, and that, you know, they say that they're working on trying to get binding guarantees into the agreement. So let's see how far they get with that. But there's a fundamental change, and I think Herman Hauser, the original founder, was absolutely right to be saying this, that it... Two things, really. One, that the control moves somewhere else. And Cambridge is a very delicate ecosystem. And, you know, a lot of these very clever people who are doing fantastic stuff, yes, they do get very wealthy off the back of it, but they love Cambridge. They believe in Cambridge, and they put stuff back into Cambridge. Now, if that moves to Japan, it can't be the same, in my view. So I think there's a fundamental
issue. You think the problem of people making the ultimate decisions, if they're sitting in, I don't know, it's off Bank of Base, if they're sitting in Tokyo, that's going to be the problem.
Quite rightly. They will see it differently from people who are located and who are Cambridge through and through. So it's clearly a change. But the other thing is, I think we'd all hoped that at some point, Cambridge and UK would actually be able to grow one of these great tech companies into being one of the global companies.
To have our own, I know Microsoft have a base here, but have our own Microsoft, precisely, which has a subsidiary office in San Francisco, say.
Precisely, and I'm afraid, I mean, there is an argument for saying that what we do well is grow companies and then sell them on. And I understand that argument, but I just think we could still do more, do better, if we could keep some of our own and take them onto the global level. I think that's why there's a sense of disappointment, because ARM has been such a fantastic success. I think many of us hoped it could continue.
And I'm assuming something like this, you know, the people, constituents who respond, I guess it's not Post anymore anyway, is it? It's going to be Facebook and Twitter, and maybe popping into one of your constituency offices perhaps at some time. They're going to be all, everybody's going to be against, aren't they? This is, you know, few people I would have thought in Cambridge could say, oh, this is a good idea, let's sell one of our best companies to the Japanese.
Well, I say, when journalists were phoning me asking me for comment on Monday morning, they were saying, have you heard the good news? And it actually took me to actually stop some of them and say, hang on, let's just think about this a bit. And of course, there are, you know, the Conservatives, I'm afraid, went into overdrive on Monday morning, saying how wonderful this is. And my feeling is that certainly the Chancellor was looking for some good economic news, seized upon it, and I don't think,
even though his boss Theresa May, the Prime Minister, had said not that long before, and try and stop these takeovers by foreign predators.
Well, precisely, and not only did she say, I mean, this is in her leadership speech 2 weeks earlier, she'd actually particularly made reference to the Pfizer AstraZeneca issue, which of course was a very big issue a couple of years ago in terms of takeovers. So she'd specifically said that she was going to be different about this. And at the very first test, I mean, I don't think anyone expected it to come quite so quickly. The very first test, she just rolled over instantly and sent Philip Hammond out to kind of to lead the cheering. Now, I have to say, some of us, I did remark that this was only a few weeks after the whole referendum issue had been about taking back control, so-called. What happens? We sell control.
You think it was used, perhaps used to demonstrate that Britain is open for business, and look, those economic forecasts aren't as bad as everybody said they'd be?
I think it's very hard to avoid the conclusion that the government was desperately looking to try, as I say, to capitalise on what they were spinning as good news. But I think it's absolutely the opposite. I think what it shows is that basically Britain is now vulnerable. I think I described it at one point, perhaps slightly unfairly, as a bargain basement. But given the fall in the value of the currency, suddenly some of our companies look rich for picking. And that's what we're seeing. And this all goes back, to that vote on June the 23rd, which, of course, was sold on a lie by people like, incredibly, the man who's now our foreign secretary, shouldn't be, in my view, not fit for the office. I am still furious, absolutely furious, that they managed to run a series of lies through that referendum campaign, and I think people were missold. And I think if we were run it again tomorrow, we'd get a very different result.
Mm. Just on the correspondence thing, I noticed looking through social media, there's been a few grumbles of people who claim you've barred them on Twitter. Is that right?
Oh, you don't spend your whole life just tolerating people being abusive. I mean, if people are going to be abusive, then frankly, I don't want to listen to them.
Mm. Because there has been, at the extreme, there was... The brick through the window of the constituency office of Miss Eagle when she was still in the constituency. And you see it, frankly, you see it with, dare I say, local councillors around Cambridge. And it's like, well, hang on a moment, shouldn't you be stopping trees from being cut down rather than being nasty to fellow people on social media?
Well, I'm afraid social media is a bit of a problem. And, you know, there's lots that's good about it. But I think... I'm very interested in all the data issues. I've just set up a group in Parliament to look at some of this. I think we're in a learning stage. It's a bit like you look back to the development of the printing press. You know, it took actually governments and civilizations quite a long time to work out how you deal with these new opportunities in a civilized world.
Do you think it gives a disproportionate voice, perhaps, to some people? I probably might have made this comment to you before. It sometimes seems that only people left of centre on Twitter, because you never seem to see people supporting the government on social media. And statistically, there must be some people who like the government because they got into office.
Well, absolutely. That's the other danger, that it's a relatively small group of people talking to one another. The way I do my politics is I actually go out and talk to a whole range of people, including quite a lot of people who don't instinctively agree with me. What I find quite often, actually, is if you approach people constructively and engage with them, it's surprising how many people you can find common ground with. That's rather different from some of the stuff you see on social media.
Mm. A couple of minutes left. I want to quickly ask you about the Greater Anglia Rail franchise, which seems to be going on forever. I think the shortlist was put forward in June, and now we're a few weeks late and actually finding out as to who the lucky winner is. What can you do about that? Who are you talking to?
Indeed, and I'm asking questions about that too, because it's a very, very important decision. I suspect that, obviously, with all the political turmoil that's been going on, and of course there's a complete change in the government's transport team, the Rail Minister, of course, resigning last week, saying that she'd been ashamed to be the Rail Minister at some points, which I think I was there when she said it. I thought that was quite a strong statement and probably reflects the problems that the rail industry is in. So it may well be that there are delays because of that.
You think it might be rolled on, say, for another 6 months, just to buy a bit of time?
I don't know about that, but I want these decisions to be made fairly soon, although I have to say what I'd like most of all is for them to be delayed until we've got a Labour government so that the railways can be brought back into public ownership.
Would you like it to be retained by the incumbent, Greater Anglia?
I'd like it actually to pass back into public hands, because I think that is actually the answer in the end. I think we've had this experiment with outsourcing and franchising, exactly the same in the health service. I was delighted this week to see that the outriders of privatisation, as I described them, have now been wound up after the huge waste of public money on the Uniting Care fiasco, the Hinchinbrook Hospital fiasco. Mm. What we're seeing is that public services are actually better delivered by people whose goal in life is to provide a decent public service. All this contracting, franchising, all the rest of it, basically in the end, the trouble is it puts a lot of money in the hands of lawyers and management consultants when what you want is the money at the front line.
Busy few weeks. You're actually going to get a holiday over the summer months?
I am definitely going to be taking a holiday. I suspect every year there's a period of time when all our local residents breathe a sigh of relief when they don't hear from their local politicians for a while, and we may be heading for that moment.
Oh, I miss those days. Daniel,
I'm glad to hear it. We'll be back, and I'm sure we'll be contactable if you need us.
Daniel, thanks very much.
Thank you.